Improving health literacy, the ability to understand and act on health information, is key to improving health outcomes and lowering costs. Welcome to the Health Literacy 2.0 podcast, the podcast series from EdLogix, where we talk with business, HR, health, and community leaders and explore unique, data-driven, and effective behavior-changing solutions that can help improve people's health literacy and increase their engagement with health and wellness programs. For show notes and bonus resources, visit www.edlogix.com/podcast. Okay, let's get started.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's podcast from EdLogix on Health Literacy 2.0 and Workforce Wellbeing. I'm Seth Serchner, Chief Health Officer at EdLogix, and I'm so fortunate to welcome my friend and long-term colleague, Dr. Dexter Cherney. Dexter, thanks for joining us. I know you're traveling all over the place. Don't worry about any background noise. We're just happy to have you here. So for everyone out there, can you kind of give us a little bit of your background and your career path?
Oh, yeah. Well, I've been around for a long time. To your point, we've known each other for a long time. Sometimes people say I suffer from attention deficit because every 5 years or so, I'm off to doing something different.
Right.
I'm a physician. I was trained in general surgery, but later went on to get my boards in preventive medicine and lifestyle medicine, and essentially spent most of my career doing those kinds of things. And I've been at all over healthcare. I've been the CMO for a large health plan, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan. I've worked for a biotech company, Amgen. I've also been on the academic side. I did some time with Vanderbilt, and I also oversaw all of their employee benefits and did something similar with Cummins Engine, oversaw all of their global benefits, as well as oversaw their on-site clinics across the globe as well, really doing strategy and putting together those benefit designs. I've also worked for a telehealth company, Sapongo FoodSmart, really trying to make sure that people that are food insecure get the things that they need it, and also led some research there to figure out what works and what doesn't. My current capacity is I'm the president of Luzon Wellbeing Institute and really trying to find what that sweet spot is between community things such as Luzon, which we know works, as well as lifestyle medicine, which we know works too. And so oftentimes what happens is that even in the same community, the provider side that's doing lifestyle medicine and the community side that's doing things like Luzon, which is a lifestyle but not lifestyle medicine approach to making communities healthier, they never talk to one another. So what we're trying to do in the Institute is to try to bring these folks together in collaboration, not just those two, but even the larger community to do things. And what the Institute also does is we really study the outcomes and what's happening there. And we also try to use that those successes to change policy. So how do you pay for things? You know, the term food is medicine. Well, we pay for drugs. Well, will we ever pay for food? And if so, how? Do we pay for it for life or not? So those are some of the challenges we have. But anyway, that's the work that I've been up to recently.
You never waited tables? I mean, come on.
I was an assistant manager of a Jack in the Box in college. So how's that?
There you go. At one point or another. You made it to assistant manager. Nice.
Yeah, I was proud too. I still am.
Yeah, absolutely. No, those jobs teach us a lot. So for the most part, I think people understand blue zones and that research around the world that showed where people live the longest and the lessons that we learned from them around diet and social connection and all the rest. But I'm fascinated, this lifestyle medicine, I won't say controversial, still kind of evolving and finding its niche. And I find myself on both sides. On the one side, I'm so happy that docs are getting behind this and the word lifestyle is in there and that other things besides perhaps medications were part of it. And part of me is a little bit like, oh, we're clinicalizing, we're medical modeling, you know, kind of things that maybe are not about a medical model. Give me your kind of point of view on this. I wasn't perfectly articulate about it. Maybe you can help me.
What I'll tell you is that, as I mentioned, so Blue Zones is lifestyle. I mean, Blue Zones is basically places where people live, as you said, well into their hundreds, they're healthy, they're doing fine. I mean, there's no secret why these folks are healthy, right? They're moving naturally. They're eating the right foods. They're out in nature. And we live in a society that really doesn't have that. They've done surveys going back for decades now, and they find only about 3% of the population. It varies depending on when you do the survey. Anywhere from 3 to 4% of the population actually lives a healthy lifestyle. And so, you know, over 90% of us are not. And when you go into traditional medicine, so to speak, they just hand you a pill. They spend 15 minutes with you and they hand you a pill and they say, go lose some weight. Well, we live in an environment where that's going to be very difficult unless you really know. So what lifestyle medicine doctors do, they are prescribing the elements of the Blue Zone, the elements of these healthy societies, but they do it in a very personalized way. They do it at a therapeutic dose. So they have to have just the right amount, and they do it out of balance so that you create synergies. And what happens is when you get most people living a healthier lifestyle, and in this way, you're actually doing it through using a physician and coaches and things like that, then a lot of the common diseases that we suffer from and are driving healthcare costs go away. I know you know Mike Parkinson, but he led a symposium a couple of years ago at UMPC, and he brought in all the lifestyle medicine experts, all the researchers from the major universities. And what they found is that all of these things have a common root cause, and it's chronic inflammation. So we know that if you don't get enough sleep, you have chronic inflammation, your telomeres get shorter, which is premature aging. If you know you're under chronic stress, whether it's through the neighborhoods that you live in, you know, your job and those kinds of things, it has the same kind of effect. We know that certain foods, particularly ultra-processed foods, have an inflammatory reaction within the body. So really what a lifestyle medicine doctor, actually the way you might want to describe it, is an anti-inflammatory doctor.
Yeah.
And using these levers to really get at the root cause, it's the same nidus, but it appears in different ways in different parts of the body. In the brain, you get, you know, the plaques. In the heart, you get atherosclerosis. In the kidneys, you get chronic kidney disease. But if you eliminate that, all of those things start to get better. And they start getting better together. So that's really what lifestyle medicine is. And to your point, I mean, I think the confusion is that people says, well, everyone just should eat normal and that kind of thing. But the thing is, Seth, we've known that for a long time. People don't know how to do that. And so they really need an expert to do it. And the reason you need a physician is that when you start changing someone's lifestyle at the right dose and the right intensity, things happen quickly. So for example, when we did this at Cummins, we would decrease their insulin dose by a third within the first week of the program.
Yeah.
So if they're not being closely monitored by a physician, then they're going to crash. So this isn't the work that a coach could do without, you know, great detriment and harm perhaps to the patients. And the other thing is that most physicians don't get it. So for example, when we treat diabetics this way, we're giving them actually a high-carb diet. Most physicians, if you say you're giving a diabetic high-carb, what are you doing? Are you crazy? But when you do it the right way, this is the result you get, and you can actually get them off of the insulin and the medication. So you need somebody that has a little more experience and knowledge and know how to do that. And so that's why we call it lifestyle medicine, because it's physician-led. And even though we'll use coaches and things like that, you need to have a physician that's sort of at the top of the license or the captain of the ship in terms of what you're trying to do.
It's a really helpful explanation. And, you know, this inflammation is like the all evil thing, right? So we could go on and on about it. You listed, you know, so many causes of that. But if we could just address that, it was also helpful to understand as people make those changes, you're absolutely right. Their meds should change. Their other vitals change. And it's important to be able to monitor them and understand it and all the rest. I think the other thing that's really interesting is money makes the world go round, right? So how do we build that reimbursement structure? And, you know, we're all trying to get away from fee-for-service, but is there an outcomes-based approach? And it seems like lifestyle medicine would be pretty aligned with that. Am I off base there?
I think that we need to change reimbursement. I think we need to have fee-for-service for acute things. You know, like if you fall off of a ladder, get hit by a truck, fee-for-service is fine. But for these chronic conditions, fee-for-service doesn't serve us that well. Lifestyle medicine, to your point, I think is the way, because lifestyle medicine is about getting rid of those things. It's not about just prescribing another pill. It's about actually, in a lot of ways, reversing these conditions. And we know under fee-for-service and HCCs, even with the Medicare Advantage, the incentive is to find more problems so that you get more reimbursement or to do more on that person. Well, if you're getting rid of the problem, your reimbursement's going to go down, your capitation's going to go down. So it's a perverse incentive to do lifestyle medicine within those current reimbursement constructs. So we need to change those. And that's one of those things I've been working on.
So you and I have been in the employer space for a long time. What's an employer to do? Let's say they're listening to this and they go, yeah, that sounds good to me. Are they working then with their health plan or their local providers? I know there are a number of vendors that claim to do this. And I don't mean that in any disparaging way. Some do, some don't, you know, how do you sort through that? So what's your kind of take to for employers when they're trying to, they agree with what we're talking about?
Well, I would tell any employer that's interested to contact me. Yeah, you know, because we are enrolling employers into the pilot program so that they can test it on their own employees.
When you say that, are you enrolling into the Blue Zones or some lifestyle medicine?
Lifestyle medicine. So it's through the Institute, but it's not a Blue Zone project. Sometimes there's some confusion there. It's not the same as a Blue Zones project. This is something that's separate. It's really a lifestyle medicine kind of pilot. And so we're working with self-insured employers that can actually, you know, do this with their employees that they want to. And obviously, if they contact me, they don't have to sign on the bottom line until they really understand what we're doing. But I think they'll be very intrigued. And the thing is that it costs very little unless they get results. And I know people always have performance guarantees, but the incentives here are really medication reduction and disease reversal. That's what the doctors are really trying to achieve. And if they achieve those, then they get a result. You know, a type 2 diabetic costs about $11,000 per year, every year that they have it. So what we do is we take that savings now that the person's not a type 2 diabetic, and that's what we use to pay incentives to these doctors that have reversed those conditions. So that's what they're really working towards, but they have to have the right skills to do it. And we're not going to reverse every type 2 diabetic, but if you look at the bariatric surgery data, it's about the same. We can do about a third of those, but we do a third without surgery. Mm-hmm. And think about the person's quality of life if they haven't had, you know, half their gut cut out in order to force them to change their lifestyle. We teach them ways to change their lifestyle that are actually pretty good.
Yeah, no, that's super helpful. So we'll give the information when we post this. Is there an institute.org or something? Just can you tell us where we go to reach you?
If you send them my contact, dexter@bluezones.com. We're in the process of redoing our website, so I can't give you a website, but I will answer those calls and we'll get this going. You mentioned, you know, health plans and brokers. There are some brokers that understand this. There are others that don't, or perhaps it's not in their financial interest to understand this either, because if they're driving people to certain carriers because of commissions and things like that, then it may not be in their best interest. Just like I mentioned for physicians, oftentimes it's not in their best interest. I think at some point we can redesign how we pay brokers too, just like physicians. But for the pilot, we don't really have to go that route.
Yeah. So really interesting. I want to pivot slightly and get your take on this. So this is EdLogix podcast. I've been very focused on health literacy for a huge part of my career, patient education, health education, behavior change, all the same thing, basically, or what we're trying to do, right? And you as a doc understand this all too well. And my kind of provocative point of view is, and we have a white paper on this, that we've been doing health literacy 1.0, brochures, kind of boring. Like, still, I talked to a guy who he tore up his knee the other day. He goes, yeah, the doctor drew this little picture for me. The doctor drew a picture to explain to him what's torn and what he might fix. Where we now have behavioral science and gamification, we have data and a way to personalize information, and we have interactive multimedia. Everyone learns by YouTube and other ways. We can shift from 1.0 to 2.0 using behavioral science data and interactive media. And I'm just still grappling with why it's taking us so long to understand this very important piece of the puzzle. And to your point, some of what you were just explaining is hard for people to understand. How many times have you tried to explain insulin and glucose to people, right? It's hard. So I've seen a movement towards like games and quizzes and other ways that people learn. Where do you see like this health literacy piece fitting into all of this? Is it part of the puzzle?
It's part of the puzzle, but it's not the only part. There are missing pieces. So it takes more than information. And we know this, right? To change behaviors. And it also takes the right kind of information. So for example, you and I both know that healthcare workers are the sickest people on the planet. And they're the most educated. And the number one killer of cardiologists is heart disease. And yet, in communities where they have a healthier environment, such as the Blue Zones, heart disease is almost unheard of. So these folks have this knowledge to be a cardiologist, and yet they're dying of the disease that they're supposed to be able to really take care of themselves and others. The folks in the Blue Zones don't have any healthcare literacy, and yet they're living, and they're not having heart disease. So what I would say is that we need to change the breadth and depth of what we mean by health literacy. And I would like to add the term lifestyle literacy so that you can prevent these things. And so I would say it has a role. You know, once a person is sick, then yeah, they need to know how to take their insulin and why. But I think we also need to go upstream a little bit and say, how do you, you know, insulate yourself from these things that are killing cardiologists and everybody else? Yeah.
I love the idea of lifestyle literacy, because I talk to some people who are really into financial, and they go financial literacy, lifestyle literacy. We're kind of an illiterate society.
We are. I was just at a school and they were saying that 40% of the population that surrounds that school are illiterate.
Right.
So how can you have health literacy if you don't have regular literacy, right? You got to have start. So we got a real issue. But, you know, some of these things you can teach in a way that doesn't require someone to really read.
Well, and that's what I'm talking about. There's games and illustrations and infographics that are very engaging. I think it's really interesting, this idea of lifestyle literacy, even that. And I would include that in that health literacy is really helping people have the knowledge, skills, and confidence to navigate their own health journey, whether it's a well one, a chronic one, an acute one. And this lifestyle piece, again, they need to understand what the elements of that lifestyle are. And diet piece and everything else you're talking about.
That's exactly right. So, you know, one of the things that it's really easy to teach somebody, if they're having problems with their cholesterol, one of the things is to get the cholesterol out of your diet. Well, what has cholesterol? It's real easy. If it has eyes, then it produces cholesterol just like we do, right? If you don't eat that, then you're not eating cholesterol. So what has an eye, right? Yeah. And what doesn't is makes it really simple. Plants, fruit, grains don't have eyes. So therefore, there's no cholesterol, and you can eat those foods all day long. It won't affect your cholesterol. But anything like, you know, a cow or a chicken or those things, they have eyes. It's going to change your cholesterol. So easy stuff like that. That's the way we have to do it.
Yeah, I love it. I love that analogy. Well, look, I really appreciate your time. I know you're on the road. If you had a few little parting words of wisdom for us. I love some of the themes that we pulled out already around chronic inflammation and lifestyle literacy. And I'm like you, there's a context in which we all live that has a huge power on our behavior, more than even if the individual has, quote, willpower. So all of that comes together. But what kind of parting theme do you want to leave us with here?
What I would say is that what you're doing is so important. We have to increase awareness around these things. And to your last point, too, is that it's not all about willpower. Willpower is like a muscle, and after a while it fatigues, and then we go back to whatever. If we're surrounded by temptations to do the wrong lifestyle all day long, it's just really difficult. So what I would say is let's try as much as we can as a society to change the built environment to encourage, you know, walking, biking, getting out in nature, standing up, not just sitting on Zoom calls all day, getting off of the cell phone and the social media, give yourselves breaks in those, because we all know where these things are leading. And we're getting, as a society, more and more unhealthy, changing the food, eating more natural foods, right? So you don't have to do just one thing, but if you can do a little bit here and a little bit there, it can make a difference. I've seen it. And I just think as a society, we need to start thinking about this. And if food's not your thing, well, then help people get a better night's rest, you know? So get rid of the noise pollution and the light pollution. There's so many things that are sort of off balance in our society that we can choose where we want to. And every community may decide where they want to change. It might be a little different or what they want to tackle first. But let's do something. And let's just not rely on, you know, the next drug that's coming through the pipeline. That's not the secret, because each of these drugs is like $100,000. You know, I sit on a P&T committee that looks at reimbursement for these drugs. And it's crazy, the prices for these new drugs. We just can't afford it.
It's a great message. I was talking to an employer and they were, wait, $1 million a year for a drug?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, we're doing something incredible for that individual, curing something. But I mean, $1 million. So,
yeah.
There are people in need, so I'm not to say that I don't want them to have that, but to your point, there's so much we can do with lifestyle and the other things we talked about. So I'm all for it. We're going to get in touch with you, Dexter, at bluezones.com. And again, I just so appreciate everything you're doing out there and how you're trying to push it. And it's a great theme for people to just know you don't have to do it all. You know, sleep more. That's a good one. Get up, take a walk.
Yeah.
Just chip away, people. Just chip away.
Exactly. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you, Dexter. Appreciate it. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us today on the Health Literacy 2.0 podcast, the podcast series from EdLogix, where we talk with business, HR, health, and community leaders and explore unique, data-driven, and effective behavior-changing solutions that can help improve people's health literacy and increase their engagement with health and wellness programs. Remember, for show notes and bonus resources, visit www.edlogix.com/podcast. We'd love it if you subscribe and share the show with your colleagues. Thanks, and see you soon.